The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
I saw a pale horse,
the beast.
We're told in the book of Revelation.
This is not a human child.
Isn't an angel?
Satan. Armageddon is almost upon us.
Order the use of nuclear weapons.
The world is a fine place and worth fighting for.
From one end of the world to the other, I will oppose you.
They're here.
Welcome to the end of the world.
Wrestling not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. This is PID Radio.
Wondering where we can buy some of this global warming we hear so much about? I'm Derek Gilbert.
I want a can of it right now. I'm Sharon Gilbert, and welcome to our humble, very chilly bunker.
It is December 13th, 2010, and we're glad to be back, glad to be in the warm, and pray that you and your family are as well, as it is a frigid night here in the heartland.
It is indeed. We pray for all those people who, seriously, I mean, there are areas that they have just been, they have feet. Of snow, not inches, feet.
Yeah. And of course, football fans notice this because tonight there are two, not one, but two Monday night football games because the regularly.
Two of them?
Well, the regularly scheduled game between the New York Giants and Minnesota Vikings, which was scheduled for yesterday at the Metrodome in Minnesota, Minneapolis, was delayed when the roof collapsed. And then because of the volume of snow. Even if they'd been able to clear the field and play the game with the roof retracted, which, you know, as cold as it is probably not a great idea, they just decided it wasn't safe. So the NFL has moved the game not only to Monday night, but they've moved it to Detroit. So the Vikings are playing a home game in Detroit, which I'm sure is going to make Lions fans really happy. I mean, I know if they moved that to Chicago, there would be Bears fans who would show up there just to tell the Vikings, give the Vikings a piece of their minds.
Oh, what's wrong with you? Can't so, you play anyway. With the – hey, what's wrong with the weather up there? We play in that in the summer.
Yeah, the problem is the Bears played yesterday the only other team in the National Football League that's accustomed to this type of weather, and that's the New England Patriots who pounded the Bears. So anyway, yeah, we'll
leave
football.
We didn't do the dance. The Bears. Well, hey, guess where I shop today?
The one place in America that's guaranteed safe.
It is, exactly. Walmart store and Janet Napolitano.
Actually, just leave that Chicago accent behind now.
Actually, she pronounced her name Napolitano.
Hmm.
Listen to her when she says
yeah.
her own name.
Yeah. This is a new partnership between Homeland Security. Homeland Security has enlisted Walmart.
Hi, I'm Janet Napolitano, Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security. Homeland Security begins with hometown security. That's why I'm pleased that Walmart is helping to make our communities more safe and secure. If you see something suspicious in the parking lot or in the store, say something immediately. Report suspicious activity to your local police or sheriff. If you need help, ask a Walmart manager for assistance. Thank you for doing your part to help keep our hometowns safe.
Yes, because, you know, places like Bettendorf, Iowa are just hotbeds of radical violence.
And terrorists hang out at the Walmart. I got to tell you, that's
yeah.
where it all starts, buddy.
Boy, howdy. This
time of year, too, with Christmas shoppers.
You know.
Now, let me say this. Had someone really jumped on and followed up on the story of the Texas Twosome,
yes.
who had all of those cell phones that they had, that didn't they say they bought them at Walmart?
Yeah, they were going Walmart to Walmart and buying all these track phones
mm-hmm.
Or disposable cell phones. You know, when
I would say, people, if you see someone with a cart full of track phones,
mm-hmm.
that is suspicious behavior. Unless
right.
they've got unless it's a bunny rabbit and he's buying for the family.
Yeah, it was, and this was a story that Doug Hagman, who was very gracious to give up an hour of his Friday night this past Friday on A View from the Bunker. That was a story that he brought out at the Northeast Intelligence Network's website a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of young men from Texas were in the Detroit area going from Walmart to Walmart and buying cases of these phones. Why is that significant? Because those phones can be used once and thrown away, which is very useful when you don't want the national security apparatus, which tracks a good percentage of our mm-hmm. cell phone calls, and can pinpoint via GPS where your calls were made at any given time, or where the phone has been at any given time, just by checking the mm-hmm. pings when the phone looks for a signal. So if you're wanting to commit some malfeasance, you might find such such phones useful, and keep a box of them handy so that you can make your phone calls and then throw them away immediately after making the call. But when the FBI was contacted in this case, and again, this is not recent, this is a couple of years ago, local law enforcement was interested in pursuing it, but the FBI said, nothing to see here, move along.
Yeah.
And the young men were let go.
These guys are just entrepreneurs.
So that aspect of this announcement by Janet Napolitano, which was made last week and posted to the website, and you'll find the link at our Instapaper.com account.
Well, actually, we'll put it in the show notes.
And we'll put it in the, yeah, right,
Instapaper
right.
links may disappear.
Fade over time, right. So we'll put it in the show notes at PIDradio.com. But you can see the video from Secretary Napolitano.
I didn't know it was Napolitano.
No.
That's news to me.
No. Oh, and by the way, it's Adrian Lamo, not Lamo. We've been mispronouncing his name for the last week.
Please forgive us.
Yeah. So anyway, I think that the message here is kind of a subtler.
Yeah.
It's less obvious and more insidious, and that is that we are being encouraged by our government to spy on one another.
Hmm.
That person in the next line over there looks a little shady. I just don't like the cut of his hair or whatever. You know, it's
well, that's just it. Her her call to arms,
yeah,
for the snitch on your neighbor crew is so vague.
Mm-hmm.
That really leaves it up to the individual as to what he or she considers suspicious.
It really is.
And I feel sorry for the Walmart managers.
Who are suddenly going to be called upon by people to say, I'm sorry, I'm not sure if this is suspicious or not. It's like, look, I'm trying to restock the shelves here.
Because if you have been in Walmart lately, you know that especially the redesigned stores, they have these little televisions, little flat screens
mm-hmm.
at the end of a lot of the aisles,
mm-hmm.
and there are commercials on them. But this is where it's going to be playing.
Right. On the end of the aisles as the display, you'll see Secretary Napolitano telling you that if you see something, say something. And this is an administration and a Homeland Security Secretary who is so afraid of being politically incorrect that they won't even use the word terrorism. What was the phrase they wanted to substitute for terrorism? Human disaster or human caused disaster or something like that?
Cat.
They don't want to... That was Sam's suggestion.
Yeah.
But, they won't come out and call terrorists, but they want us to watch our neighbors in the local Walmart, in our hometowns. This is so ludicrous.
Because Walmart, in many ways, even though they no longer really, sell all American goods,
right.
they have over the decades been sort of a piece of Americana,
yeah.
which is ironic because in many ways they've destroyed Americana, but I think that they are a symbol of small town America.
Sure, yeah. I've heard it suggested that they should rename the stores Wall of China Mart,
mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
that's, just tongue in cheek. But you're right. I mean, they're in every small town in America, and I'm sorry, but you're not going to find hotbeds of terror in most of the towns, 99% of the towns in which you find a Walmart store. My take on this is that this is just the administration doing what politicians do, creating the impression that they're doing something without actually really doing something.
And they spent, wait for it.
How much?
$13 million to do this.
On this. Yeah.
Yes, they did. They did.
Anyway, just feel safe for the next time you're running into, pick up your stuff.
I know.
Walmart.
Well, there are other things to talk about. Before we get back to the list of things that I have put at Instapaper for you and for us to take a look at,
mm-hmm.
I want to get to something that I wanted to talk about last week,
and we kept not getting to it. Well, yes.
And it was these twins and the madness on the motorway.
Yeah, this is a really
the
bizarre.
Erickson twins, they are so strange. And one of the reasons I bring this up is because it isn't just that they were trying to commit suicide. It's that they seemed indestructible. They were like Terminators. They kept getting smashed over mm-hmm. and over again. And even in fact, Sabina Erickson, who had to leave her sister Ursula in the hospital, she was arrested and taken in and then released within 24 hours because she passed muster with all of the doctors who took a look at her. She seems fine now because she was nuts on the motorway. If you watch this video, you will see she is nuts. Both of them are. And she seemed relatively calm, like a different personality when she was in the police station. They released her, and then she killed a man. After the stabbing was reported by this man's friend and neighbor, and the police were on their way, she was discovered by another Good Samaritan, and he observed her bashing herself on the head with a hammer as she was running. Mm-hmm. This is a woman who had already been hit by a car, a couple of them, in fact, I think, and had survived all of that. And now she's bashing her head with this. I mean, this is not just a soft hammer. This is a hammer.
Right.
And running along, and then she jumps off the overpass to avoid the police and falls 40 feet.
It's an unbelievable story. It sounds like it's made up, but it's true. This was all captured by BBC camera crew in May of 2008.
Much of it was the motorway part, but and the police station part, but the stabbing, no.
Well, that right, was, that's true.
That's eyewitness testimony.
But the stuff that is, you know, that happened on the motorway is crazy enough. The fact that you know, she ran out in front of a truck, gets hit by the truck, gets up, keeps going. One of them's knocked out. The other one's critical. The unconscious one gets up, punches a police officer, runs back into traffic, gets hit by another car. It's
right.
Just incredible.
Honestly, it reminds me of the things that Russ Dizdar has told us.
Yes.
About the multiples that he's dealt with and the unbelievable strength that they have.
Yeah. A Black Awakening type situation, or the Satanic Super Soldier, to borrow another phrase.
Well, here's what another thing that I found really, really interesting about this. This is something that happened a couple of years ago, but just recently here in the United States, there was a set of twins from Australia that came over here, and not far from Columbine.
Mm-hmm.
Tried to commit a double suicide pact where they shot each other.
That's right. And only one was fatal, though, right?
Well, exactly. Only one was fatal. The surviving twin was shot in the middle of the forehead.
And survived.
And survived.
Huh.
They had written to the Columbine, one of the Columbine
Harris or Cleveland
students. No, to one of the students.
Oh, one of the students. Okay.
It says here, let's see, I've got this here, had written to one of the, to Brooks Brown, who was one of the Columbine students, in support of the shooters. As someone who has been rejected, victimized, and ostracized in their life, I would like to thank you for giving Eric that chance.
Hmm.
This is the letter that was written to Brooks Brown after an article came out where Brown essentially said that, I'm trying to see exactly what it was he said. I don't think that he really supported them, but he didn't. It was as if he were trying to understand them. I don't have it his quote in front of me. I'm looking at something else that I snipped and saved to a little file here. Kristen, and I don't know how the twins pronounce their name. Hermeler. Kristen was one of the twins, and she had written this letter to Brooks Brown, and it was only about 20 miles from the Columbine High School where this was discovered among their belongings.
Mm-hmm.
This is the shooting range where they chose to go and end their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that didn't completely happen. So here's the question, a number of questions. When they left, when the twins, we're getting back to the Erickson twins, when they left in Sweden in 2003, they went to the United States. And why did Sabina in Ireland, when Ursula was in the United States?
Hmm.
At least that's my understanding. Now, they may have gone to Ireland first, but they definitely were separated. Now, here's what kicks it off for me. Ursula went to Sabina in Ireland and was visiting with her, and within a short visit, the two of them, according to Sabina's husband, they bonded very deeply, very quickly, and then they left. Sabina left her children.
Hmm.
Left her husband, left her children, and the two sisters went off to the UK to die.
That's really bizarre.
Well, yeah. That's one of the reasons that I think psychiatrists have called it folie à deux, which is a madness shared by two.
Mm-hmm.
I think the other one is bouffe de l'orange, a puff of madness.
Which is just another way of saying we don't really know.
Well, that's exactly what it is. But,
we're
you know,
guessing.
If you're going to – a madness shared by two doesn't have multiple personalities.
Yeah.
Here's the other thing. Ursula is back here in the USA now.
Oh, she is?
Oh, yeah.
Walking the streets.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah. She
great.
Survived after her hospital stay and was released. And she – because she had committed no other crimes, she was released.
Huh.
Sabina is going to be released in the next year or two.
Huh. So what tripped their trigger, as it were? What set them off, and what were they supposed to do?
Isn't that – I mean, there are so many questions surrounding this pair.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they are Swedish twins, because when you do biological studies, having a control, having twins, is always handy. You know, just ask the Germans.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that they were twins and then just recently we had twins just suddenly committing suicide.
Now, the thing that I didn't catch until just this moment as I was reading a story here or just glancing at a story about the suicide pact twins in Colorado. The two from Australia, right.
Mm-hmm.
Even when we talked about this before, shortly after it happened, I thought they were teens. I didn't get the fact that these twins are 29 years old. I mean, I thought, okay, teens, 16, 17, teen angst sort of thing. They're over here for some school thing, and they decide that they're going to show their solidarity with Klebold and Harris at Columbine. No, these are 29-year-old women.
Mm-hmm.
These are not kids. And as you know, obviously the women in the UK are adults, you know,
mm-hmm.
married and with children. These are not. You can't blame it on teen hormones or teen depression or anything like that. But. Now, and then this gets into the realm of the speculative here, so just bear this in mind. Do I remember correctly that we have heard that with these programmed multiples, that occasionally it's at about the age of 30 that the programming starts to slip sometimes? Am I remembering that?
You know, I don't know.
If
you're listening to this and you remember, send us a note, and you can always, again, if you're not sure how to reach us, you can always send a note to radio@peeringintodarkness.com.
Right.
Always send it there.
Mm-hmm.
But you can also reach me on Facebook. You can reach Derek on Facebook. But radio@peeringintodarkness.com.
We'll get there as well.
We'll always get it to us.
Well, this is my curiosity's peaked now. I'm going to send a note to Russ Isdar later just to ask him about this because I'm sure this is something that's crossed his radar. So
I'm sure it has.
A disturbing a couple of incidents that may just be coincidental, that you've got two sets of female twins going off like this. I'd like to know if there are other stories out here that we've missed that are similar.
Well, I've got a Google automatic where it looks for
new
twin
search?
Stories.
Yeah.
Exactly, new
okay.
search. Thank you. Off to another story that is sort of in the same vein, not twins involved, but it's a stabbing in that Stockton, San Francisco area.
That area out in California where we've seen so many weird things happen.
This is, it's in that little odd triangle with San Francisco, Stockton, and Sacramento in that little area. This is a town called Vacaville.
Mm-hmm.
And, excuse me, maybe pronounced Vacaville. I'm not really sure. But it is about a 13-year-old and the 18-month-old sibling who were both stabbed repeatedly and molested by a 14-year-old boy while the mother was gone overnight, and she didn't get home until 9 in the morning. She had no idea what had happened, but apparently the 14-year-old boy was a friend with the girl's older brother.
Huh.
He somehow got into the house and molested the 13-year-old girl, stabbed her repeatedly. We're talking a couple of dozen times. And then stabbed the 18-month-old baby.
Hmm. Sure. Well, this is clearly evil. And again, another weird example of things that seem to be happening, and maybe we're noticing it because it's, you know, because we've been looking in this area for stories like this, or maybe there really is something weird that's taking place out in that area. We had Tracy, California, pop up on the radar a couple of times, and of course we had the case that dragged on forever on the, especially with the, you know, the tabloid journalists like Nancy Grace with the Scott and Lacey Peterson story.
Well, no, I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about the one in 2001, the summer of 2001. It wasn't Gary Condit from Stockton?
We'd have to look that up. But, yeah, this is Vacaville is northeast of the San Francisco Bay. And you're right. It's in that same little triangle.
I think he represented, the young lady that who died.
Chandra Levy.
Chandra Levy. He represented her district. And I think she was from the same town that Lacey Peterson was from. I think she was from Modesto.
Well, checking now. Gary Condit served in the House from 1989 to 2003, California's 18th congressional district, which includes the northern San Joaquin Valley, which is looking at a map now. And again, just curious to see.
Yep, Chandra Levy, Modesto.
And this is that area that, yes, Stockton, Modesto, Atwater, Merced, you know, those areas east of the San Francisco Bay. So, yeah. Okay, yeah, that same basic area there. Huh. Well, days like this just make you, even with the snow on the ground and the sub-zero wind chill, to be out here in the heartland. Not that we're free of that sort of thing, mind you. We get that. We understand that. But it just seems like there are certain areas of the world, and this little area of California east of the bay seems to be one that attracts all kinds of evil.
Mm-hmm.
And just really bizarre stuff. Just a quick political note to shift gears. One of the most incendiary pieces of legislation of the last, in my lifetime, actually, in terms of the reaction of people to it, and the fact that Congress passed it despite, you know, 60% of Americans wanting, opposing it, and that's the health care reform bill that passed this past year. Interestingly enough, today, December 13th, a federal judge ruled that a central plank of the health law is in violation of the Constitution. U.S. District Judge Henry Hudson says that the law's requirement that Americans must carry insurance or pay a penalty, and I quote, exceeds the constitutional boundaries of congressional power, end quote. Huzzah! Now, whether that stands on appeal, because it will probably wind up in the United States Supreme Court, remains to be seen. This was the lawsuit filed by the Attorney General of the state of Virginia, and it's the first court ruling against this piece of legislation. A couple of other judges have ruled in favor of it.
I was going to say there are other states that are have opposed this and filed other attorneys general who have filed against this.
Right. And what Judge Hudson did not do was grant the plaintiff's motion for an immediate nationwide injunction against implementing the law. So the law goes forward.
Yeah, it does.
But it will be interesting to see what transpires here. There is some legal hope, perhaps, that this will be blocked. However, as Christians looking at the prophetic, you know, looking at this from a prophetic standpoint, the trend is going to be toward a global government, and this may be a speed bump in the road for those who are pushing in that direction. Nothing more, but you know,
everything is on the Lord's timing, and if He needs to slow it down, He will.
Yeah, so we can enjoy it while it lasts. Anyway.
Good heavens. Well, on the good news, if the healthcare system over here is similar to the healthcare system over in the UK, we'll get letters like this that tell a man that he is pregnant with twins.
Well, that would be first.
Yep, over there, there was a hospital that sent out a letter telling a man that after the tests were run, that sure enough, he was not only pregnant, but he was pregnant with twins. And there were a number of markers on his file that made it very clear that this was a man that they were sending this letter to. So, of course, it turned out to be wrong and a mistake. But that's the kind of stuff you have to look forward to over here.
When the government's in control of all your records belong to us. Yeah.
Didn't you love it last week when Barack Obama was at the podium, and he was trying to fend off, you know, the slings and arrows from the right, and he had former President Clinton up there to help him out. Then suddenly he said, oh,
I've got to go.
I got to go.
Yeah. Keep Michelle waiting. Well, yeah, it was.
To which the next question was, President Clinton, could you please explain the, and of course, Clinton eased right back into the saddle.
Yeah. I watched Mike Huckabee, a little bit of Mike Huckabee's show on Fox News Channel Saturday night. And, you know, don't agree with everything Mike Huckabee stands for or the people he's associating himself with. But he is a genial guy. And even when he's poking fun at the president and the former president, he does it with a kind of a good-natured approach. But he was... His take on it was pretty funny. And, you know, of course, Bill Clinton, the fellow Arkansan, you know, it was good natured. It was a humorous take on it. But it almost in watching Bill Clinton's, you know, just his comfort level at the podium there as he dealt with the press, it almost made you wish for the days of President Clinton,
which is
a scary thing to say.
I found myself thinking, oh, Bubba, honey, where have you been?
Because truly, that's one thing you don't get from Barack Obama, among many things. But one thing you don't get is a sense that he would enjoy coming over to, you know, sit and meet the neighbors. You know that he keeps everyone at arm's distance. He's always seems as though he's condescending, and he came across as very angry when he announced the tax cut deal last week. And in politics, especially in American politics, those that the public perceives as angry, we perceive as the loser. If he had been laughing and smiling, joking, Joe Biden is great at that, by the way. You know, and Clinton was pretty good at it. Yes, we know he's got a temper, but he was pretty good in those public settings in front of the cameras and the microphones at just, you know, off the cuff, just getting everybody won over to his side. And while we disagree with his politics, we disagree with his the things that he has done, many of the things that he's done, I still have to say that I think an evening, you know, dinner with Bill Clinton would be a fun evening.
Oh, I think so, too.
Yeah. Can't say that about Barack Obama.
I'm not sure I'd want Hillary with him, but, you know.
Yeah. Well,
she can sit and, you know, Sam can, you know, keep an eye on her.
So, speaking of the media, there's a topic we're going to toss around this coming Friday night on View from the Bunker that I think will be kind of interesting. Rob Skiba, who is the man, you know, he and his wife are working on pulling together support for a forthcoming television series called Seed, which deals with a lot of the issues that we talk about here on PID Radio. And he and Sheila are basically using film as an outreach tool. Where they're showing supernatural films, and not just films, but, you know, pseudo documentaries like the stuff from the History Channel on ancient astronauts and so forth, and inviting people over to watch it for free, you know, serving refreshments, and then talking about it afterwards, and using it to illustrate or discuss and pass along biblical truth, which I think is kind of an interesting concept because there are a lot of people who I think are seeking that kind of truth, but don't want to sit through a church service to get to it.
You know,
wouldn't
I think,
feel comfortable in a church setting.
I got to tell you, I think churches are dying.
Yeah?
I think they are. I really do.
Well, you know, I agree with you there. The surveys done by George Barna over the last, that I've been looking at for the last 6-7 years would seem to agree with that. You know, according to Barna, only 9% of American adults have a biblical worldview. And when you restrict the sample to just people who identify themselves as born-again Christians, in other words, people who say that I'm going to heaven because I've accepted Jesus Christ as Savior and for no other reason, only 20% of them, according to Barna, have a biblical worldview, which means belief in ultimate absolute truth, the inerrancy of the Bible, virgin birth, atoning sacrifice, you know, things like that. So 80% of people who believe they're born-again Christians or who are born-again Christians have a biblical worldview or don't have a biblical worldview. Only 20% do.
That's crazy.
That is crazy.
I mean, if you can really, if you're really calling yourself a biblical Christian, a born-again Christian, someone whose name is written down in the Lamb's Book of Life, how can you not have a biblical worldview? You are by nature a believer in the Bible.
Well, except
the Bible
for those
says
parts that are old fashioned about, you know, who you can have sex with and when, and, you know, this stuff in here about the Red Sea parting,
oh,
that was probably just a weather condition.
I know, and
condition.
Honestly, I think that's one of the reasons that maybe the churches should die. Radical, isn't it? Maybe we should go back to home meetings.
Interesting thought.
Yeah, well, small groups, that's what these big churches do. They have small groups, but hey, let's just cut out the middleman and go straight to the small groups.
Amen to that. And let's get back to the Bible and begin. And this is the thing that is part of the discussion I had with Dr. Jim Garlow. How can we reclaim the planet, reclaim America, when we can't even hold on to our churches?
Well, I'm going to say something that I know isn't terribly popular, and then we got to go. And that is that maybe one of the reasons that the churches are dying is because they are demanding way too much of the fewer and fewer people in the pew. It's really difficult if you're a non-Christian to look at a building with a lot of people in it that generally dress up on Sunday morning and go there, and the building is really fancy, and you're standing in there in looking at this with secondhand clothes on.
Sure, and that's my point exactly. People who may be seeking but don't feel comfortable in that setting, because and that means an effort on the people who are inside to say, "Hey, come on in."
That's right. So maybe in 2011, maybe that's the goal we should set. We all start a home church.
Well, these and many other things will come to the table again as we return tomorrow, God willing. And until then, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. PID Radio is a production of the PID Radio Network, a division of Gilbert House. Please visit our website at PIDradio.com, where you'll find show notes and links to connect with us on Twitter and Facebook. We wish to thank all those who help undergird and underwrite our ministry through prayers, feedback, and donations. To contact us directly, email us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Opening music adapted from The Alchemist's Tower by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. Closing music, New Day Coming by Steve Grace, stevegrace.com. Content, copyright Gilbert House, and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derives 3.0 Unported License. For more information, see creativecommons.org.
Gonna step up to the microphone, say it loud and clear.